Hey yo, welcome to the podcast, the liberated educators with two brothers already and able sit at the table. It's Ken Sheldon, D. Linnea, yeah y'all ain't doing this. They're purely intellectuals and equity enthusiasts, creating change by shifting the conversation. It's critical to our culture, to our people, to our nation. And for the record, yeah, they talking education. Yeah, they talking about building our own, because we've been patient. A CPT concept, three different segments that's jam-packed with content we all can invest in. Breaking that chain called tradition, the critical conversations on issues. But y'all listen, they ain't talking about it late. Y'all just hearing it. So sit back, relax, tune in, and be a part of this. You know how hard it is. They know you want greater. They know you want the liberated educator.
I wish people could see my face. I wish people could see how happy I am right now. How excited I am right now. We also need it. We need an alternate intro. Though we have the dopest intro that exists. Because every now and then, we are blessed. Blessed. To have an incredible guest. And we got one today. I mean, oh my gosh. Sis, you just gotta unmute. You just gotta come in. Soon as folks hear your voice, they gonna know who it is.
I'm here. Yes. I'm here. I am blessed and I am present.
Yes. Oh goodness. Okay, so I'm gonna try my best to not act an absolute crazy man today, because just any opportunity to chat with you, to connect with you online, it's always a blessing. It's always good. It's always fun too. Ken is somewhere around here. I kind of feel like we at the cookout and you're like, where Ken at? I'm like, he was just here.
That one cousin.
You know, he having a conversation somewhere else, talking to another cousin. Who knows? He may pop in. He wants to say what's up. I know he's on the road, but he literally was like, I'm hopping in. So if all of a sudden the whole trajectory of this conversation changes because he hops in, that's just what it is, because it's his family. All right, wait. Who are we talking to right now? For those who don't know,
I am Jariksa Vijalva. You will probably know me as Yariksa.
So real talk, we had the conversation right beforehand. I was like, all right, sis, I want to be real. Every time I hear you introduce yourself, I'm like, I got to work on that. So I'm going to work on that. But goodness,
gotta get it right.
It's so good to see. First of all, just how are you doing? How's Mackenzie doing? How's life?
I said I was blessed, right? I am great. Mackenzie is, she's growing up. She's getting big. She's 8 months now. I've shared, I guess, Mackenzie's life with everyone on social. Everyone who truly means something to me knows a bit about Mackenzie. You know, I started a new job, which we will all discuss that today. So yes. I'm just like nonstop smiles. And then I'm here with my brothers, so why not?
Hey, Brian, we could always tell what mood Brian's in by what music he plays in the background. I could tell that B is on chill mode. Always. All right. So I'm just ready to jump straight up into it if you are. Only if you are.
Let's go.
Because I saw you drop a couple of cryptic statements on Twitter. And I was like, uh-oh. Homie about to make a move. I could tell. We could all tell when somebody about to make a move. When it's just like, I'm going to let you know enough so that when I make the announcement official, you're not all the way surprised. But there were some different, I'm not going to even reference anyone in particular because I want you to feel free to share only what you want to. But I could tell when you were had to be on the move. Emotionally, it seemed like you were either on the move or you had to start getting on the move because of what I would only state as trauma recognized trauma. Mm-hmm. Pain recognized pain.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to share.
So all I'll say, listen, mama didn't raise no fool.
I thought you were about to say punk. I'm like, I know. She didn't raise no fool either.
No fool. Listen, I was always brought up to believe that, you know, you give yourself the tools, you learn from other people, and you mesh that together, and you're just powerful, yeah. right? Whether it's when you walk into a room, whether if it's the words that you speak, the resources that you share, you should be able to stand out, but also be able to stand within a community. Yeah. And these past few months, every single time I've done a project, whether if it's within my own school or the community itself, I've always questioned, is this enough? Mm. And when that response is constantly no, and it could have been better, and it could have been bigger, and who's really your targeted audience, then I have an issue, right? Because a lot of what I discuss is coaching responsive teaching, a lot about being honest, being real, but making sure that we're getting into quote unquote the gutter, the ghetto, the urban community, and just making sure that we're really targeting our Black and brown yeah. students. And not to say that they all live in the gutter or the ghetto or the urban communities, but here in Brooklyn, that's where we're from. And for months, I've been just going back and forth with, well, Yuritsa, what's your worth? Mm. You know, what's your worth? You have companies paying you a lot of money to speak for an hour, and then you're going back into your office during the week, and there's you're not eating enough, right? You're not getting enough. You're not stimulated. Mm. And so a lot of the things that I was sharing on social media was just more of helping others know that when you're not satisfied, especially when you put out something and I guess that feedback that you're getting is not enough, mm. then it's okay to want more. Yeah. You know, I'm not about being, you know, complacent. I'm not about just sitting here and saying, well, that's okay, you'll do better next year. Nah, let's change it up.
Yeah, yeah. Nah, I feel you. Okay. All right. So I just hop in. This is what happens when I just ain't talked to you in a minute, been wanting to. When I say talk, I mean hearing your voice. We chat every now and then, and I always appreciate your feedback yeah. and thoughts. I appreciate what you put out there for the public to be able to utilize. So in particular, so for those who don't know, if you don't know, now you know. So my introduction to you was all of the fabulous culturally responsive instructional pieces that you were putting in Flipgrid for other educators to be able to utilize. You have a little hip hop track in the back. You putting your little dance in to bring it in. You speaking to historical context, relating to even subjects that I think were even outside of your particular field, but how you were able to connect to it and allow students to connect to it. I was like, this is straight fire. Like every opportunity I have to both utilize and to broadcast to others to use these resources, I got to make that happen. So tell us more about like how all that came to be. And what's some of the stuff you've done in the past in terms of culturally responsive instruction, if you don't mind.
So I was honestly just sharing everything that I had created for my own students. Prior to social media or even using Flipgrid, I had always created culturally responsive text. So whether that was a task where I'm asking students to look at historical trailblazers and give them superpowers and that would change the trajectory of the future, or if I'm asking them to really think about the effect civilization in Egypt has had on the world today, whether if it's looking at themselves, who they are, their identity, how does that correlate with, you know, Black Lives Matter? How does that correlate to this war? Because I feel like there is a war on race, right? And just being honest with what's plaguing our communities. So we know there's drugs, we know there's poverty, we know there's systemic racism. Everything folks don't want to talk about were things that I discussed with my students. They were overage students here in Brooklyn, New York. So my students' ages ranges from 16 to 21. These are the population of Black and brown students nobody wanted to teach, right? And then those who did teach them, I feel like they were failing them because now you're just on this fast track of they have to pass. Those were definitely the students that I believe a lot of those teachers who became a part of the system, you know, for to clear their student loan debts, actually just did not want to target, right? So I had a lot of students who were, they were angry and they had every right to be, but as their teacher and as a woman of color, I just was like, all right, so how could I make learning not only more fun, but purposeful for you? That way, when you are graduating, you're not just thinking about that assessment that you passed. You're thinking about, well, in Ms. V's class, I was able to challenge the norm, right? I was able to really look at the roles that the corner stores play. I was able to look at the reason why there's so many police stations around in our neighborhoods. So it was just being realistic. And then when I began to create those discovery topics, it was never intended to actually get the attention of Flipgrid. It was more of, this is what teachers need to be doing. And so I'm not gonna say, you know, pay me $10 on Teachers Pay Teachers. I'm saying I'm going to create something on this website. Please access it. It's free. You have no reason not to have access to it or to even click to read it.
Major props. Major props. So in other words, you ain't new to this. And that was always clear from jump. But when all of a sudden everybody put on their social conscious spectacles and they were trying to do stuff that they ain't never done before, it was really clear that you had been about this business for a minute. You could tell. You could always tell.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when I started sharing things online, I think I had like 200 followers. And they were all people that I knew. So it was more of, hey, let's just do this. And then, you know, as I guess everyone started to get woke, right? Everyone, this is during the pandemic, everybody wants to be an anti-racist. Everyone wants to call themselves culture responsive is now when I get those followers and that count goes up. Yes, Ken, performative wokeness.
Yeah. Well, and I just got to say this part too. One of the things I always appreciated about all the things that you put out there is that teachers didn't have to pull out the dictionary or, you know, lift their lexicon in order to gain understanding of how to utilize some of the things that you're doing. Many, many things of which were, this is how you can get the class started. This is how you can get this topic started on this. So I just want to say thank you. This is an opportunity to be able to say it.
Oh, thank you. I keep saying I'm excited to be here with my brothers, right? But think about a time where you've like sat through a lecture or someone's speech or even through a PD. And at the end of that hour, you're just like, hold up. What did that person say? This had nothing to do with what's on the program. And I've had that experience, you know, even as a lead teacher for 6 years, where I was just like, wait, hold up. They paid her how much to be here? And she said, what? No.
Talking loud, but ain't saying nothing.
Can I say that encapsulates probably 99.9% of the mandated PD that most teachers get force-fed in their school districts.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I certainly hope nobody's saying that after my talks.
Right.
Oh, man. That's the kind of feedback I would want, though. Like, real talk, like, if I haven't crafted a message or a learning experience that, one, inspires you, two, resonates with you, and three, has a definitive call to action, then that means that I need to go back and look at how I designed it then, because it's the last thing you want is to be, like you said, at the end of the hour. Like for me, a lot of my PD was around, like, I want my hour back. And you're not going to get that back. In fact, I'll connect that to, it was interesting because of the timing with the NC2A tournament. One of the players that for the University of North Carolina that has been balling in the whole tournament, who single-handedly helped North Carolina eliminate my alma mater, UCLA. He has a tattoo. I love his tattoo. He has a tattoo on his arm that has its an hourglass with sand in it and then a clock. And the line it says is, time is the only currency of which you get to spend it once. Oh, yeah. I was just like, okay, I wish I had that idea and I would have gotten that same kind of tattoo, because that's, yeah. So to your point, you know, yeah, you don't want to go through a professional learning experience and at the end of it, just wondering why why you are either mandated or you chose to invest your time with nothing that does anything.
Right. And like you mentioned, this is the PD that a lot of teachers are actually being forced to sit through, right? And then talk about, which we know, if you didn't learn nothing during the PD, you sure enough don't have anything to discuss after. And at my school, well, the school I was at previously, that was something that, you know, we spoke about. And I was just like, hey, so what are we doing next? And they then changed my title to a peer collaborative teacher. So then I led the PDs for 6 years. And it was awesome, you know, an extra $12,000. But now I'm listening to the teachers and I'm saying, okay, so this is what we're going to do for our population of students. But not every lead is the same.
No, they not. Okay, I gotta say it. I gotta bring it in. Because it's so evident and clear that you produce things that just come from who you are. Right? It's just who you are. So that's what you produce. And then you produced, I'm gonna say, twins. And you can get mad at me and then help me clean it up. But you know, you celebrated with the public. You announced the birth of your baby, and that was amazing. Just to allow us to all celebrate with you, to get in on your personal life in that regard. And then it felt like shortly thereafter, you announced another baby, and it was a very, very special project. It's a project that I have on my shelf. My own children have experienced it, and so I know many, many others. Tell us about your other baby. I don't know if I should have said that.
you said twins, and hold up. Hold up. Does he know?
I'm a father of twins.
You had me rethinking everything, my whole experience, the whole pregnancy. yes. So 8 months ago, I gave birth to my baby girl, Mackenzie. I've always said that for the longest, I've only wanted one child. And I said, it doesn't matter if it's a boy or girl. I just know when I have that one child, life for me is going to be totally different. So I had asked, when I found that I became pregnant, I had asked everyone on social media, hey, send me culture responsive books. So I think I had, because we opened up more boxes last week, I think I have a total of 84 books, children's books, some of which Mackenzie will never look at, right? Because that's just my decision. And some of which I'm just like, hey, let me read through it. What is it that I can take away from this book? And even if she's not looking directly at the book, then this has to be a hidden message that I could just share with her. And opening up those boxes while I was pregnant, I really realized this has nothing to do with Mackenzie. You know, some people just sent me books because they knew I was Hispanic. So they sent me like books about Spanish wrestlers. I can show you guys like the crazy books. Some sent things that I've read before in the past, like A Nazi the Spider, right? And I still read through those books and I was just like, Mackenzie's father's Jamaican. I'm Panamanian. So already we know Jamaicans and Panamanians have history, especially with working on a canal together. Mackenzie's also, like all of my nieces, born in Brooklyn. So her culture is totally different from what I'm used to. And I'm experiencing that even more where her and her, well, with me and her dad, we go back and forth with what she should be doing by now at 8 months in regards to eating, right? Because for me, it's arroz con leche. She has two teeth. Which means you got to give her that arroz con leche. He's like, no, baby food, you know, stage one. And I'm just like, mm-mm. In Panama, she would have been chewing on chicken bones by now, right? Culture.
Yeah.
Culture. And in the books that I read, I was just like, this is not what I want my daughter to think she's a part of. I need to create something where she's going to ask questions. She's going to ask, why is it that I'm teaching her this? And I felt like the only way to do it was by creating my own children's book. But then I also didn't feel like I should be giving everyone the information. I didn't want to create one of those children's books where it's like, you go on page 5 and it seems like I did heavy research. And then pages 6 and 7, it's like this image that I took out of the encyclopedia and your kids should know this. I wanted to group things together and group names together and just say, hey, this is what they have in common. But as the parent or as the educator, it is your job to figure out who these individuals are. And even when I completed the book, my boyfriend still didn't read the book. And I waited till it was published. And he was so upset. And I was just like, nope, you're going to wait. Because if you ask me to change something.
Okay. Wait. So you just clarified something. He didn't read it because you didn't let him. Okay. I thought you were putting him on blast. Right. And I'm like, oh, man.
Oh, no. Listen, he supports everything that I do, even when he disagrees. And he'll just challenge it. But once the book was published and I gave him a hard copy of the book, it was more of, oh, wow, I didn't know this. And who's this person? And I was like, these are the same questions Mackenzie's going to ask you. So now, as a parent, you have to sit here and do the research, because what I'm not doing is giving you all of this information. And I think that he appreciated that much more than me sitting there next to him like, okay, well, let's talk about this person and let's talk about Frida Kahlo. And it's, you need to do the research. You are responsible as a parent and as the adult to have these conversations with your students, right? One PD is not going to change your whole scope on things. It has to be honest, it has to be realistic, and it has to be attainable.
Double Dutch. Ken. Wait, go. I'm ready to go. She just gave us so much.
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, big time. I mean, there's two big takeaways from what you just shared for me, aligned with things that you and I have had the opportunity to talk about, not even just here in this podcast, but other things that we've been on. Dee and I have talked about it. Even Brian, our producer, and I have talked about it. Number one is the book that you wrote serves as a mirror for your daughter. So that goes in the whole idea, the mirror's window and sliding glass door. It's an authentic voice. It's from an asset perspective. And it is a way of developing what I call, or I describe as internalized empowerment. I see myself reflected in a capacity that I feel good about who I am, what my cultural identity is, what my ancestral history is. And therefore, I realize that I'm capable of excellence, amazing things, whatever descriptor we want to use. So that's number one. Number two, which I appreciate, that's why I put it in our chat, which I'll share, because obviously the audience can't see our chat, is you wrote your book in a way that you're not going to give an educator the binder. Nope. You're going to give them access to narratives and perspectives that there's a high probability they have not been exposed to. And ideally, that exposure serves as both an inquiry as well as a intellectual curiosity catalyst for them to go and do additional research on it. And then fill in any blanks that may exist within the book, that you're not leaving those blanks there intentionally. The whole idea is what I always say to folks is there is no binder. You become the binder, which means that you have to do the actual work.
Yeah.
And the more you get narratives and stories and representations that are similar to what you have graciously shared with not just for your daughter, but anyone else who purchases your book and takes the time to actually read the book, is the whole idea around these are narratives that if you weren't around, what's the likelihood that we would even have access to them? I mean, I, for one, which maybe we'll save it for another episode, I would consider myself pretty well versed in, honestly, in Jamaican, Haitian, and Panamanian history. Because there's a connection literally with all three. And if you really want to add it, I would even add Dominican in there as well. But that's a result of my intentionality in learning more about many of my brothers and sisters that live in those countries who we share some degree of our ancestral history. And then like you put in the chat, the Chinese as well. It's amazing when you start to study history truthfully told, how much we are all interconnected in many ways. Not all good, but nevertheless still interconnected. And how come we aren't using our learning experiences to use those as meaningful cross-cultural connections so that it uplifts each of us?
Too true. All right, you said so much. I just wanted to chime in with this quote, because I quote this in my book, which is Toni Morrison said, if there's a book you really want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it. And so, first of all, shout out to you for just taking that call. You were so disturbed by the books that you got that didn't meet what you wanted for your daughter that you said, I guess I gotta write it. So you wrote it. That's big.
Listen, we all walk the walk, we all talk the talk, and what kind of parent would I be if I would have allowed myself to sit there and read those books to Mackenzie, knowing that some of them don't serve purpose? You know, I was raised by a single mother who was an immigrant, just as I am, and a lot of what we did was around purpose, whether that was going to school to learn and to be able to come back and share it with the family in a 3-bedroom apartment. It's 12 of us. Oh, it's a learning experience, right? Because we only got one TV. And it's in the living room. And when the adults want to watch TV, that's it. So it's just about being honest and being realistic and just knowing that I want Mackenzie to serve a totally different purpose. But I also don't want her life to be the same as mine was, where I'm sitting here and I'm just like, I'm being forced to learn because I have to show the adults different things. I want her to be exposed to things and to take in whatever it is she feels is important to take in, right? So we put it all out on the table. Thanksgiving, my grandmother, my mother, and my aunt, they cook everything. Do I eat everything? No. Sometimes I don't even know what it is that my grandmother made, right? So it's just more about putting it out on the table and just ensuring that, you know, we are giving those kids those options. And for me, it's giving Mackenzie that option.
I love it. I love it. I mean, your dedication, you say this book is dedicated to the Mackenzies of the world, which I just thought was brilliant in and of itself, because you're giving nothing but shout outs to your daughter. I mean, her name is the title, is in the title of the book, but you broaden it from jump to say that this is actually written for all of the other children like my daughter, who need to remember or need to be told that they come from a lineage of brilliant people. And then you name drop throughout. And I love that you give enough. And Ken and I talk about this a lot, like just creating enough curiosity that would make, isn't the right word, but should at least incentivize the reader in such a way that they feel like they have to take the next step. They have to learn, like, who is this person? I have to do some more research. It's kind of like when you watch a really good documentary and then you're fact checking left and right, like, wait a minute, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you're on that Google search like crazy, and you're like, whoa, that really did happen. Oh, but there's much more to the story once you start to realize the depth of the real story or the full story. It just blows you away. And I feel like you did that. You did that for us, and the conversations that can continue even with my children around what is written here is something I feel like it's timeless in a sense. So just thank you.
Oh, thank you. You guys are making me like all warm and fuzzy over here. Why is it the sweater? But it was just, honestly speaking, I think I didn't know the effects the books will have on the general community. At first, it was just more of, oh no, I just need to write this. And once it was published, I had a lot of teachers who actually supported the book DM me, like, I didn't even know how to pronounce some people's names. I had to like Google how to pronounce certain names. And I remember like sitting with my friends and just saying, ain't that something? You're an educator, and you know, especially those educators who teach Black and brown kids, you would think that they would know at least some names, or to take the time out to read through a book first to understand how to pronounce certain words before you actually read it out loud. And it's just, to me, it's just mind-blowing, which obviously has led up to now me creating another project, which is going to be out in the summer.
What?
But it's more
pew, 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 exclusive. What? Put us on. Yes, what you doing?
So first, I'm creating a website called Mackenzie's Adventures. But the newest book that'll be out is still a children's book, but it's from the perspective of Mackenzie, and just her having a culturally responsive teacher. So it's going to be called Mackenzie's First Day of School. And I'm just going to go around the experience of what it should be like, right? For a person to acknowledge that you exist, for a person to pronounce your name correctly, for a person to ask, what are your likes and dislikes? Because I feel like there's no book like that, but also there's no book from the kids' perspective of what inclusion really looks like, right? There's been research, there's been a lot of people who have speculated what it may feel like for that kid. I want to be the first to basically say, and this is to Mackenzie's future teachers, if she's in your classroom and you can't pronounce her name, you need to ask her. Don't make assumptions about her mother not being able to speak English because you see my name on an attendance sheet or on a blue card. Ask questions. And these are things that I think I experienced being a child of an immigrant and sitting in classes and folks not giving my mom the right paperwork because they assumed she didn't know English. So just that, but that's definitely, you guys had the inside scoop. This is my first time sharing it.
Hey, that announcement wasn't cryptic at all. That one was straight up. Appreciate it.
Of course. Only for you guys.
Only for...
You know, and you've brought up another... I'm smiling, but on the inside, I'm hurting with what you just brought up. Because when your name is consistently mispronounced and an adult who hasn't figured out that they need to start adulting doesn't take the time to learn how to correctly pronounce your name, not only have they stripped you of arguably one of the most important components of your personal being already, that's a scar that you're going to carry the rest of your life. When I talk to so many educators who have names that are, even let's say if the phonetic pronunciation is the same of what we commonly see, that's aligned with how we commonly see it spelled, but it's spelled differently. I try to be as observant as possible. And what I mean by that is I try to look for the nuance in communications that doesn't involve an auditory component to it. And I will tell you, and this is for the audience, I just watch every time it kills me that it's their shoulders slump a little bit and their head tilts down just slightly. And I'm just like, I literally respond now with, I'm so sorry you had to go through that. How might we work together to support each other and ensure that we break that cycle? That needs to be broken. And these are adults. These are adults that in some cases are middle-aged or older, and they still to this day remember how they were treated based on just even started off with how their first name was either pronounced, mispronounced, or in some cases, which is why I put it in the chat. And if you haven't seen it, I recommend you watch the YouTube video. It's Facundo the Great, which is absolutely fantastic video on YouTube. But I've even seen it firsthand myself where if a first name is quote unquote too difficult to pronounce, they literally just change the kid's name. I'm just like, how you gonna do that? You ain't that child's parents. Like, seriously. So I'm glad you're doing that. And I like I said, for me, it, I don't know. Like I said, I'm smiling with what you're sharing, but on the inside I'm hurting because I know, for me, my name is an Irish Gaelic name, Kenneth. It ain't hard to pronounce. But I have plenty of classmates that I know for sure they suffered in silence in many of the learning environments we shared because of their names. And even many of my friends I grew up with whose families immigrated from Africa, you know, where they had names that had like real strong cultural meaning behind it. And to just watch them get stripped of their identity because of mispronunciation or name, and their cultural connection because of the mispronunciation of their name, all because an adult who decided it was more important for their own comfort to figure out something, to figure out a way to address a child, let me be clear, a child, rather than taking the time to say, help teach me how to correctly pronounce your first name, and then also what meaning is there? Is there any meaning behind it? I'd love to know more about that too.
Yeah, I put out there in our chat, see, folks don't know, or maybe they do, you know, we're always having like a little side conversation, even as others are talking, but there's a Flipgrid that I like to use for workshops. And to be real, it's typically utilized in professional development settings with predominantly white teachers. It's a model for them, right? And it's say my name, got a little Beyonce gif up in there, but I asked three questions. Like, number one, please say the name that you like to go by. Number two, share one significant thing about your name, and it can be family heritage, nickname. Matter of fact, Ken, I think I got that one from you. And then please pronounce your name slowly one more time. And it's real funny because somebody like me will be like, D, right? Someone else will be like, Sean, like real simple stuff. But it's really, it's more of a model. Like this is something you can and should be doing with your students, but also just that connection. Like when you recognize that oftentimes, this has been my observation, predominantly white teachers tend to have no sense of significance behind their name, right? Or there's some here and there, but when they practice the same thing with their students, they recognize that there's something much deeper and bigger that may be connected to names. And so assumptions should get thrown out the window. Back to the book real quick. I got to say two things about it. Number one, the illustrations, of course, are absolute fire. They are beautiful. So that seems to be something that was super significant to you. Of course, Jen LeBan hooked that up. But then secondly, you don't say this, but I feel like you imply it, which is to say to your daughter and to the rest of the McKenzies out there, tell me the truth about my history. Tell me the truth about my worth in this society. Am I on something? Am I near the fire that seems like that you put on?
That's spot on. That is spot on. And, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned the images because I was real, I'm a very technical person. And when I wrote out what I wanted the layout of the book to be, and Jen could probably speak to this, I put comments next to everything. And it was more of, I don't want you to do it exactly like this, but you have to take these pointers because I needed the message to be across the board, right? So if students are having difficulties reading, then you still see that image. You still see that as a reflection of a person that looks like you, right? I don't know what Mackenzie's going to look like when she's 7 or 8, but if I can envision her as a Black girl in New York, you got the two pom-poms, you got your Nikes, even though I wasn't able to put a Nike check. But this is what I envision. This is culture. This is a part of who we are. I'm not going to have Mackenzie in a sundress because I know we live in Brooklyn. It may not happen. But I wanted to be very intentional with what kids see throughout the book, but also dropping names that I don't think people really know. And if they've heard of the person before, they don't know what that person has done to actually create this nation or to build this nation or to change, you know, Black and brown experiences. So it was very important for me to have the images in a way where it's influenced by the artists. It's influenced by what Jen has seen in regards to history, because there's a lot of names where in our chat, we were like chatting on the manuscript because it was Google Docs. Jen would ask certain questions and I would reply with a link. I'm not about to sit here and go back and forth with you. Read this article. If you don't know about something, you got to look it up, you know? And I think that's what also sparks conversation, because if this is a project that you're going to work on and you're going to go and do a PD eventually about it, and someone asks you, why choose this person, or why did you mention this person, or why did you draw this image? I need you to be very transparent about what this person has done for the United States, what this person means for a person of color, and just them being a trailblazer, the importance of them actually being added to that book.
Hey, there's so much there. I want to not say too much. There's so much there. I mean, even the fact, I know Jen, I know that you probably put her on to some people, and after a while she started to recognize, oh, if I have a question, I can do some searching, and then maybe I can come back and we can have a discussion based on what I've discovered. That's powerful in and of itself. I'm like, where's the addendum that speaks about how y'all collaborated on this? Because, man, I mean, we got the about the author, we got about the illustrator, but about the process, I'm just like, how long did it take for this to come to be?
A month?
What?
Yeah, I did two drafts. The second draft was one of my closest friends actually reading and just saying, just change two words, and I was done. And then Jen's images a month, because I was like, I need it out by February. I want it out by my birthday. And she was like, okay, let's do it. And I was like, let's get this done. And then, you know, look forward to many more projects. But a month, and I think it's more because I already knew what I wanted to say. So it was just about getting it on paper.
That is dope. And also shout out to you for having that internal goal of I want it out by my birthday. I did the same thing. Like, I need to have this out by my birthday.
I know.
I need to celebrate.
That's it.
I should have done the same goal, but I'm not waiting until next year for mine. So,
right, right.
When is your book coming out?
In a minute.
Right? In a hot minute. It'll be okay. Out in a minute.
Yeah, it's like, in all honesty, real talk, I've had a number of delays for a number of reasons, but I actually look at the delays as a gift of time, because I've been able to do additional research, and I found some other books or peer-reviewed published research articles that help bolster some of the points that I make. You know, my main thing is always being able to discern the difference between fact, opinion, and formalized research, and how do you even go into that formalized research and discern fact versus opinion versus bias that worked within the instruments and the measurable instruments of the research itself. So, you know, for me, especially with what I'm writing on, I need to be able to scrutinize who did the research, what their disposition was, and did they account for biases in the context of the research they performed. Like, I can say I got a statistically significant sampling, but if I handpick that sampling, then that's still my bias. It's going to be influenced. That's going to influence the results of the research. So it has given me an opportunity to do all of the above, to where I don't expect it to be my best work possible, because I'm always a work in progress, but I expect it to be the best work with the best information and presented in the best way at that particular time. So I commend you both for having deadlines and clearly sticking to it.
I didn't have no deadline.
And I
took me a solid two years.
Unfortunately.
2 full years.
But you still did it on the day of your birthday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had to put it out there. I had to say, yeah, there was a time when it got to a point where it's like, okay, that's the deadline. Like, now there's the deadline. Before then, I'm not overstressing myself, because, you know, recounting pain is painful, right? Even when you're doing it in such a way that your aim is to try and inform someone else, or to help give perspective, to help give some practical steps for people to utilize. Even in that, it's painful, and you never know when those things will just take the breath out of you, take your wind out. I'm like, all right, I need a pause. I need this pause. And ain't nobody stressing me, so why am I stressing myself? But I love it. I love it that 1 month, like Biggie in the booth, like, lay it down. Where's the track? I'm ready. I'm ready. So I'm looking forward to more projects, since we know you could drop bombs like this in a month. You like Pac in the booth. Pac said he didn't have time. He had to show up. When they show up in the booth, it was to record 3 songs, not one. So
I know that's right.
So you've already let us know that you got another project underway, a website. You started putting together a Flipgrid as an adjunct to Mackenzie's Time Machine. We already know you on Flipgrid. You part of the Flipgrid fam now, so we got more to expect from you, right?
Oh, of course. It's nonstop.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Listen, as long as I can keep thinking of ideas and brainstorming and just looking at what folks are doing wrong, I'm always going to keep giving new things.
Yeah, yeah. To be continued on that.
There you go.
How frequently is that a catalyst to creativity, you know? You doing wrong, you doing me wrong, you doing my people wrong. So guess what? This is like the book that hasn't been written, so I gotta write it. And that is a form of, as we say, liberation.